You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
7 minutes past 10. Welcome to the second hour of the Eusebius Makhaza Show with me, Gugs Mhlungu. Good to be with you. And I'm with you until midday this morning, whereupon I'll leave you with the midday report, where you won't miss a thing. As mentioned in this hour, having a discussion about the rights of fathers who aren't married to the mother of their children, but would like to be involved, co-parent, be a part of their children's lives. And we'll be speaking to Advocate Daniel Tulari, who's a chief magistrate in the Western Cape Department of Justice. He'll be speaking to us from Cape Town. We'll also in a moment be speaking to someone who gave us a call earlier on this week with a concern about their access to their child. And we're also joined in studio by Martin Palder from Matrix Men. Martin, good morning. I hope I said your surname correctly.
Almost. Palder? Just an S on the end. Palders.
Palders. Yeah. Aha. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
And thank you for the invite. Appreciate it.
And of course, if you have any questions or an experience with being a parent, particularly a father looking to gain access to their child, and perhaps you have questions for either one of our guests, we'd love to hear from you on 021-446-0567 or 011-883-0702. You can also send us your SMSs on 31702 and 31567. We've got David in Somerset West on the line. And David, earlier on you gave the show a call with an issue relating to access to your child. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Gugs. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. And yourself?
Thank you. Pretty well. Mm. I've just come out of a long-term relationship with the mother of my three-year-old son. And since the end of that relationship at the end of May, I've basically been denied complete contact of any sort with my three-year-old son.
Mm-hmm.
And I've applied to the Office of the Family Advocate. The first time I applied, they lost my application. Now I've applied again, and I'm told that that she will only be free towards September. As far as I can tell, there's no way at all for me to do anything about this. Apparently, I can't approach the High Court if something's in process with a family advocate.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly can't afford a lawyer. The Children's Act outlines all my rights and responsibilities and that of my child as well, to have contact with me and me to have contact with him.
Mm-hmm.
But there doesn't seem to be any mechanism on the part of the state or any other body to enforce these rights.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of your relationship with the mother of your three-year-old, what is the state of that relationship? Do you have any sense of why this is happening?
Well, as far as I can tell, number one, because it's inconvenient, I suppose, and number two, the whole lot of personal issues, which I'd really prefer not to go into.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the fact of the matter is, we have a three-year-old son who, you know, his whole life, he's lived in a family home with two parents, and now all of a sudden that's become one parent, and myself as the father has just disappeared out of the picture.
Mm.
All my, you know.
And you say you've been told there's nothing that can be done, certainly through the High Court, while the matter's being dealt with by the family advocate.
Yeah, that's what I've been told.
Okay. And then, and I also understand that you'd made two other applications, and apparently those were either lost or there was no record of them. Did they ever follow up on those particular applications? Did you get any kind of resolution on that matter?
Yes, the first application I made was they said put on hold because I hadn't moved out yet. I hadn't managed to find a place. They said I should call back once that has happened. I called back and they said they had no record of my case, but they'll look into it. And then I just didn't hear anything at all. Last week I got hold of them again and submitted another application, which they said they'll follow up in September.
Mm. Before we go to the advocate, Martin, with Matrix Men, how many of these kinds of issues do you guys deal with or are brought to your attention? The issue of parents wanting to gain access to their children but not being able to, particularly unmarried fathers or people who've just gone through a split, particularly a divorce, and how their issues are being dealt with. Is David's case quite common, certainly for fathers looking to have access to their children?
Yeah, it's very common, unfortunately. There seems to be this perception still, which is kind of aged, that men really don't have access or don't need to have access to their children, because the mothers are the primary caregivers, and that although that might be true in the first 2 years of the child's life, thereafter the father can really play a very active role in raising their child. And in fact, it's very important in the life of the child for the father to be involved. It's, you know, whether you're divorced or whether you separated or estranged, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's still your child. There's nothing that you can change about that. So there is a huge need for the state to look into this sort of thing at the moment. These processes do take very long. They can take anything up to three and a half, 4 years. And at that point in time, the father has denied access to their child. And, you know, you can't buy that time back. You really can't. It's gone. And it's very painful. I quite understand what David's going through at the moment.
Of course, if you have a similar experience or have had a matter like this one, we'd love to hear from you and how you've managed to deal with it. Or if, like David, you're also looking for some kind of advice and assistance on how to proceed, a matter that's been taking a while, you can give us a call on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702. Now, just to come to you, Advocate Tulare, Advocate David Tulare is a Chief Magistrate in the Western Cape Department of Justice. Coming to us from our Cape Town studio. Advocate, with regards to what the law says, what does the Children's Act say about the rights of both mothers and fathers, but specific to today's conversation, to biological fathers, and especially in the instance where there is no marriage between the parents?
Good morning, and the morning can only be good because it's my birthday this morning.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. But let me also say, I've got an elder brother who's named David, and I'm Daniel. So that confusion. But be it as it may, perhaps let me start here before I go into the law, and say, let's look at the structural adjustments that have been made since 1994. In matters relating to families, so that South Africans understand where we come from and where we are. In the past, matters related to families were the exclusive province of the High Courts in the Republic of South Africa. And there has been an acknowledgement by the democratic dispensation to say family law matters in the main perhaps may be dealt with locally at the lower courts, because unlike pre-1994, where you had presiding officers sometimes who were not necessarily legally qualified, since 1994 the democratic dispensation has appointed only legally qualified persons to be magistrates and presiding officers in the lower courts. So as we speak, throughout the country, every presiding officer that you see in the lower courts is legally qualified. And most of the time, in all instances, has got an experience from practice of the law for a number of years before that appointment. So arising out of that acknowledgement, there has been then a collapse of family law services from the high courts to the lower courts. And I'm driven to this structural adjustment because it would appear that in the main, David's problem, and I'm not undermining what he has gone through, is informed by the quest to still approach the higher courts on a matter that can be locally dealt with in the children's court in the district where the child resides. So I would first of all encourage him to consider approaching the children's court in the district where that child resides, because that court has got the jurisdiction to deal with the issues of contact and care of children and may assist him in dealing with the problem. So the congestion that is there in the family advocate's office, as well as the heavy roles in the high courts, may be mitigated by his consideration of the children's court as the forum to approach. Now, going back to what the law says, we have in our section 21 of the Children's Act provisions that deal specifically with fathers of children to whom they are not married, to the mothers of those children. Now, they are in the main four instances that you acquire what we call parental responsibilities and rights. And I have to emphasize this. In South Africa, we don't have parental rights and responsibilities. We have parental responsibilities and rights. And there is a strategic and tactical reason why we put responsibilities first before rights.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Because we need to protect our children, and therefore it is the responsibility of the parent to do whatever is necessary to enable that parent to then access the rights that the child may have towards, or the rights that the parent may have towards the child. Remember, the rights of the child to their parents are automatic.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to agree with the studio guest to say, children need both parents in their lives as a point of departure. And in the courts and in the law, there's no age determination. We don't say the child is still 3 months old and therefore the child cannot visit the father and or the father's family. There's no such. The only thing that we look at is whether it is practically possible in the prevailing circumstances. For instance, if we are sitting with a child who's breastfeeding and the father lives out of town and the child is still a week old, it may be impractical for us to order that child spend a weekend with the paternal parentage mm-hmm. and or relatives. So what determines how we assert the rights of the parents in the nature of the orders that we make is informed by the circumstances. But let me set out, firstly, what are parental rights and responsibilities? They are, in fact, four. We are talking about the care of the child.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about contact with the child. We are talking about guardianship of the child. And we are talking about maintenance, or as some people refer to it, child support.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the four main responsibilities and rights of both parents to a child. Now, moving on to a person who is not wedded to the mother, how does that person acquire responsibilities and rights? Number one, if at the time of the birth of the child, you're living together as husband and wife in the same place, in the same, you have a communal homestead, you automatically acquire parental rights and responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
If you are living together with the mother of the child, even after the child is born, but you're living in that kind of relationship where you're living together as husband and wife, like people do in recent times outside a marriage, but they live together, then you automatically acquire parental rights and responsibilities. But then the second, third, and fourth aspects require certain responsibilities first on the father who is unwedded to the mother. The first one, it's acknowledgement that you are the father. Now, this acknowledgement can take two forms. One is that you have to approach the Department of Home Affairs in terms of what we call the Birth and Death Registrations Act. And you fill a form there, an A1 form. And those who have gone through this process would know what I'm talking about. And mothers generally know that. Whenever a child is born, that form is filled. That's the form that is used to register the birth of the child. Now, the unfortunate reality in the Republic of South Africa is that fathers, both married and unmarried, generally do not complete that form. We generally refer to it as A1
mm-hmm.
because that's its number in terms of the regulations governing birth and death registrations. Now, you have a situation where even married fathers. In other words, fathers of children who are born within a marriage. When, for argument's sake, the mother dies, there is nothing to show that he's actually the father of that child. And simply because at the time of the birth of the child or after the birth of the child, the father did not take his responsibility, which is to approach home affairs, to fill in a form wherein he acknowledges that he is the father of the child. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, outside that acknowledgement, outside that responsibility, it becomes difficult, if not impossible, then to say, I'm the father, and to assert your rights.
Mm.
So you must acknowledge yourself. One of the ways of acknowledging yourself, and this relates primarily to indigenous practices,
mm-hmm.
is at the time when a pregnancy is reported to the paternal family, all right, and the paternal family acknowledges that, yes, we are the father of the child. And consequential to that, there is compliance with customary practices like the payment of damages. That's also a form of acknowledgement of paternity, which is acceptable in law as you having acknowledged that you are the father of the child.
Mm.
Once you acknowledge that you are the father of the child, either by way of your registration as the father of the child, and or in terms of indigenous practices and customs, you acknowledge yourself to be the father, then you acquire parental rights and responsibilities.
Chief Magistrate, can we just pause there, because we need to take a break, but we'll continue from once you've acknowledged paternity and then go into the responsibilities, the four that you've set out. But if you've just joined us, we're joined in studio by Martin Palders from Matrix Men. We're also joined by Chief Magistrate Daniel Tulari from the Western Cape Department of Justice, discussing the rights of fathers, be they unmarried or not living with the mother of their children, with regards to access to their children and what your parental rights are. Many of your calls on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702, also seeing your SMSs on 31702 and 31567, and we'll get into those when we come back. 28 minutes past 10. Welcome back to the show. It's talking about the rights of fathers with regards to access to their children. And we're joined in studio by Martin Palders from Matrix Men, as well as Chief Magistrate Daniel Tulari from the Western Cape Department of Justice. And taking your calls on 011-883-0702, as well as 021-446-0567. Lots of questions, as well as experiences with this matter. And we've got Lewis in Cape Town. Good morning, Lewis.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Just a very quick one to all those fathers out there that are going through a divorce. I'm almost finished on the divorce case now.
Mm-hmm.
On the 30th, I signed the final papers. But it's been a rough road. And there's one weapon or application which no law or court can defend the father by the rights of seeing the children. And this would be the tongue. And many fathers don't realize this. And there's absolutely nothing you can do. No attorney, no court can institute a law to force a father at his will to see his sons. I didn't see my son for about 6 months. I haven't heard from them for about 7. I have, in the interim, in this whole divorce case, seen them probably 6 times actively.
Mm-hmm.
Because their brains were poisoned at certain stages of the divorce case. Certain things were said. The one at 16... and the other one is 10. So the one one is understanding everything to a certain degree, and the other one's just following suit. And if they choose through what they hear not to see you, there's nothing you can do. And yet the unfortunate thing is that in most cases, in the father's defense, the mother, irrelevant who's wrong or who's right, and the reason for the divorce, the mother or the father, whichever party has the children, has their responsibility to actually not only nurture the children, but to tell them, look, daddy and mommy are splitting up, but it is my biblical duty to ensure that you have communication with them. It's not only beneficial for your mental health, but it's beneficiary to everybody, especially at this difficult time. And my experience didn't happen, and it is catastrophic. You can never turn that time back.
Mm.
And only now am I starting to speak to them again on WhatsApp, etc. But it really is catastrophic. And I feel that fathers out there, I'm still raw. I'm almost finished with it now. But let me tell you something. Be very careful. Don't run to your attorneys and your lawyers and let them suck you dry, because there's nothing they can do. It's up to the spouse, whether they're boy or girls, whatever, that's in their care, to ensure that they... and the law should be stated that a mother or father ensure that they actually force communication with that parent under normal circumstances. Obviously, if it's an abusive parent or a drug addict or something, well, that's a different case. But just through normal, you know, splitting up because you're parting ways and all that, and you're trying to do it as civil as possible, and the one party spreading vicious ugliness about you, it's just something that no court can ever, or no attorney can ever handle.
Mm.
And it's very... very, I would say, taxing on anybody's patience and their emotions.
Mm.
But thank you for listening.
Thank you very much for that call. And when we come back from your latest EWN, we'll try and get a sense from the Chief Magistrate Tulare about what your options are in that instance. And if you have a similar experience or a question, you're welcome to give us a call on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702.
702 and Cape Talk. Your number one news and talk station.
24 minutes before 11 o'clock. Welcome back to the show. Still discussing what the rights of fathers are with regards to access to their children, particularly if the relationship with the mother has ended, either there's been a divorce, you've moved out of the home, and what your options are. And many of you lamenting the time it takes often to deal with this matter. In fact, Martin, just before the latest EWN headlines, you were saying that, you know, it can often take years to deal with this issue.
You know, the courts, it's great that it's been moved down from the high court. So there's a lot more access to the lower courts.
Mm.
And that's really nice. So you have a court that deals purely with children's rights, and so the children's court, and then you have the maintenance court. So they're two separate things. Quite often, I think in these cases, they should actually be similar. They should be in the same court because they say maintenance. So whether a father pays, does or doesn't pay maintenance, that doesn't deny him the right to access to his children. That doesn't take away his parental rights as a father because he's not paying. So we advise that they do pay, of course, because your children need to live mm-hmm. somehow. School fees need to be paid, clothes need to be bought and all that sort of thing. But cases can go on for 2 years in the children's court. And there are situations where, like David said, files disappear. There are situations where frivolous postponements are just granted. And it is just a very, very slow, very cumbersome process. So although we have the best laws in the world pertaining to this sort of thing, the processes that it needs to follow are really, really, really difficult and open to manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Chief Magistrate, just to you about the time taken to deal with the matters in the lower courts, is there an issue with, I mean, we often hear that the courts have many, many issues to deal with, but in terms of the backlog or the time taken, is there quite a big challenge of, you know, a long period taken to resolve these matters, and it can sometimes take years to do so?
Look, remember that, and that's why I'll always make a reference to our past experiences and what the present is doing in order to make the future better.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, parties used to be mm-hmm. in charge of the pace of litigation in mainly civil and quasi-civil litigation. And family law falls under what one may call quasi-civil litigation. So the pace of litigation was dictated to by the parties in the main. But recently, the Chief Justice was recently, through a constitutional amendment, placed in charge of the judicial authority and the responsibility for all the courts. And in terms of the applicable law, he issued what we call directives, which includes what we call norms and standards. And in terms of those, The heads of courts are now taking responsibility, and judicial officers are now taking responsibility of the pace of litigation. So there are time frames to say, from the date of plea in a criminal matter, within a period of 3 months, there must be judgment. Once you have reserved a judgment, that judgment must be delivered within a reasonable period, but not later than 3 months. Once, depending on the complexity of the matter, of course, because remember there are matters that are too complicated. There are matters where the issues are just factual, but the facts that are placed before court and the court has to discern where the truth lies and where justice lies is very cumbersome. But the bottom line is now the pace of litigation is determined by the judicial officer. And that's the stride. The further point is that the position that has been adopted is that in matters involving children in the main, especially when the parties are acrimonious and fighting and so forth, there is a realization that perhaps the intervention of social services plus the intervention of legal services for the child comes into play. Remember, in the main and in the past, what used to happen is the mother used to have a lawyer or an advocate, the father used to have an advocate. The person in whose best interests all must act did not have a voice before court, either personally or through legal representation. So even now, even in matters where parties are indigent and they cannot afford legal representation, the courts order legal representation for the child, especially in matters where parties are acrimonious. And remember what happens in family law. The unfortunate reality is you deal with two persons who at one stage may declare themselves the best match made in heaven, you know, and something went sour, and suddenly the one is a dog, the other is a snake, you know, changing from honey and baby to snake and dog. And that relationship has soured. So there is too much dust that the court has got to look through in order to discern the truth. So yes, the pace of litigation has been, because it was in the, mainly it was left to the parties to determine. But now courts are doing what we call case management. We now take responsibility of a matter. And I, as head of courts, of the courts in the better part of the Western Cape, can call the parties in to say, or their representatives, to say, but why is this matter taking so long? What are the issues and what have you? You know, so that we, and we also encourage, you know, talking to the parties, pre-trial, pre-inquiry, so that the true issues are actually identified. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't like him. When I look at him, my blood boils, you know. Not those kinds of issues, but real issues to discern and separate the wheat from the chaff, so that we deal with the issues that actually require court. And one point that Lewis mentioned, and which I think we shouldn't lose sight of, which is very important, is I always say in these kinds of relationship you have a triangle. At the top of that triangle is the C, representing the child. At the bottom left corner you may have the father or the mother, and the other opposite you have the other part. We must always make sure that these lines never cross, because you see in this triangle the lines never cross, and the line between the father and the child, it's on its own. So when the relationship, which is represented by the line at the bottom between the mother and the father, sours, we must always ensure that the relationship between the father and the child remains pure, the relationship between the mother and the child remains pure, and that, you know, however soiled the waters may be between the relationship between the mother and the father, that does not flow into the relationship either between the father and the child or the mother and the child.
Mm. We're going to have to take some calls, Chief Magistrate, because we've got a few waiting. Kagiso in Pretoria, you had an issue with regards to access and your rights and responsibilities, and after you lost your job. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Thanks, Kuku, for taking my call, and good morning to the panel as well. Kuku, my case is it's actually different. It's not the way you put it. What had happened is I don't have a problem with access to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I've been present in my kids' life from the time I've got two kids with two different mothers. I've been present in their lives from the time they were conceived, like they were in the womb. I've been supporting the mother, getting everything that is needed. And during that time, I was working. And what had happened was I would actually co-parent as well, because I was working shifts. Whereby I would get the kids, stay with them over like the whole week, stay with the newborn, because she was taking like instant milk. So I would do that. I was present and do everything for them. Like there was this one stage as well whereby I stayed with one of them. I had one child, the whole year I took her to school. It was me and her in the house and working shifts. Like I struggled, but at the end of the year, my child managed to be the best student in class. She got distinctions, she got certificates, trophies, medals, and all that. Like I've all through thanks God to be able to get them to that stage. But now it happened that I got sick. I was sick. I didn't know what was happening with me. And ultimately, I lost my job. And now I'm unable to support and maintain my kids as I used to. And it came to my attention as I was going in and out of hospital. I was later discovered that I was diagnosed with a bipolar condition, and which explained what was happening to me when I was still working, because I would get sick. And the pain was physical. It was like mental, but I couldn't see as to what. And the doctors wouldn't actually pick up what was wrong with me. Up until I lost my job and at work, they needed reasons why am I not coming to work. And I couldn't tell them. They knew that I was sick, but I couldn't substitute as to what it was. So all these things have affected my relationship with my kids and their mothers. They understood it first, but now it's getting difficult for them on their side as well. So what had happened was, like, I tried to explain to them, I also worked on myself. I started, I'm a business-minded person. I developed a business plan. I'm passionate about property development. I developed a business plan. I've registered a company and all that. So I'm advocating towards where I can be able to find a source of funds whereby I can be able to erect the business and be able to support my kids through property development. I'm passionate about that. I've got the gist of it. I know the ins and outs and how actually to make money in that, because I've cracked the monopoly of the competitors as well. So,
Kagiso, because we're going to have to move very soon. So, I'm just trying to get to the nub of your particular question or your particular case. So, it's about is it now the issue about regaining or rebuilding the relationship that you'd had with your children before you got ill and then subsequently also lost your job?
Yes, it's about regaining that relationship.
And does that include access to your children?
Access to my kids, I do have. I don't mind. But the problem is having money to travel to go see them or like get to buy them whatever that they need.
Mm-hmm. So
they would ask me this and that, and I'm unable to get to do that for them. And it hurts me when they say that, because I can't even tell it to them, because I don't know what to say. I feel like I'm disappointing them in a way, and I just need help. Somebody maybe who can try to assist me with trying to get my business going, because the only thing that is needed now is to sell the business to somebody who can, so that I can be able to support my kids, myself, and try to help other people out there. Because like I've gotten to know who I am, and I'm healed, I'm well, I'm 100%. I just need to get to start moving forward now to gravitate toward my passion and looking after my
kids. Thank you very much for that call, Kagiso. That's Kagiso in Pretoria. But it raises the issue of money, certainly the ability to, and it's one of the four responsibilities about maintenance, which has come up quite a lot in our, from SMSs, tweets, people saying, I used to be able to maintain my child. Things changed when I lost my work. And we know that's a reality for people. Being retrenched or whatever the reason.
The reality is that we are going through a very, very, very difficult economic period in this country. So people's situations do change. But let me just put out something there, that the most valuable things in life cannot be bought with gold and silver. You know, so being present for your children, regardless of the fact that you have or don't have money, is more important. So don't ever give up. Don't, I know it's, for a man, it's a very difficult thing because you don't have the money. You feel like you're incompetent. You know, you feel less of a man, that sort of thing. Don't give up on your children. Be there. Be present for them. You know what? Taking their hand and walking them to school is far nicer than buying them a new shirt or a new phone or something that they don't really need. So never forget that. You know, the most valuable things in life cannot be bought with gold and silver. And just remember that. So never, never, never give up on your children. Keep going.
And so, I mean, there are quite a few issues around money and maintenance.
Apparently, another important thing is,
So we know about 17,000 cases having been registered under the amended act. Apparently, we have about 6,500 criminal cases opened relating to it. And it's a big issue. And Chief Magistrate, I'd like to touch on this when we come back. The issue of maintenance, you also outlined right at the beginning of the conversation that it's one of the four responsibilities. But, you know, what does that entail? And specifically, you know, if employment, economic conditions change and you find yourself unable to meet your responsibilities with regards to maintenance, what do we do then? And we'll be speaking to the Chief Magistrate, Daniel Tolare, and asking him those questions when we come back. 6 minutes before 11 o'clock, 6 minutes before your latest eyewitness news. And we're having a conversation about what the law says about the rights of fathers with regards to access to their children, but also what their responsibilities and rights are with regards to their children. And there are lots of your calls, and we're going to continue this conversation just after 11 o'clock till about quarter past, just to give you an opportunity to send us your questions as well as your comments. And of course, give us a ring on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702. Chief Magistrate, just before the break, there was a point about maintenance and money with regards to the responsibilities of parents. And maintenance is actually quite a big thing. It's actually one of the four responsibilities you outlined. And maintenance defaulting is also another big issue. So when the law speaks about the responsibility of maintenance, what does it mean, and what happens when someone is unable to fulfill that responsibility because they've lost their job, something's changed, and now they're unable for some reason or another to meet that responsibility?
Yeah, let me say, remember when setting out the basis for acquiring parental responsibilities, I referred to four things. It was the living together acknowledgement, the relationship, contact, and maintenance as well. As one of the, in fact, the last three, acknowledgement, relationship, and maintenance, must all be present. In other words, the moment you acknowledge paternity, you must have been present in the life of the child. Otherwise, we'll have to build up that relationship between you and the child. And you must have been contributing to the maintenance of the child. But speaking to maintenance, and before I get there, let me also start back at the past and see how it influences the present and the future. Remember that we come from a highly patriarchal society, where men were put in a position by social engineering, especially in relation to provision for a family. So it's an emotional thing as well for men, you know, on their own. I can tell you as a classic example now, there are men who are in relationships, married, who are unable to support themselves, whose spouses are able to support them, but they don't come to court to claim maintenance. Whereas when the situation is otherwise, when it's women who are in a marriage relationship and the husband is in a position to provide any, he doesn't. They do come to court for their maintenance.
Mm.
So it's an emotional thing as well. And so I'm trying to indicate to you to say, when you enter the terrain of family law, you only not deal with the law. You also deal with social issues. You also deal with psychological issues. All right. So this question of the ability to pay goes in both ways. In certain instances, you and it comes from that this history of patriarchy and the positioning of a man sometimes as a sole provider and or the main provider and all. So the moment you don't have that economic muscle, you feel of a lesser being as a person. The contrary is also true. There are our women who, because of social engineering, the moment you are unable to provide, then you become a lesser father. It's a societal problem. It's not a legal problem.
Mm.
It's a social issue. It's a psychological issue. Unfortunately, we have to deal with it at the courts. We can't divorce these things. And that is why, in dealing with family law matters, whether it's a maintenance, whether it's contact and care with the child and whatever, you, courts use other experts. Because remember, I'm trained in law. I'm not trained in psychology. I'm not trained in social sciences. So I don't know how, for instance, if for instance, let's say there is a child who's 7 years, who says, I don't want to see my father. I only know the legalities. I don't know how the child, from a social and psychological point, reached that point. So in order to understand that child, I must be assisted by a psychologist and a socialist or a social worker and other experts. And that is why you'll see that in the terrain of family law, those who have been involved in that litigation, you'll see that the courts use other expertise of other experts in that field.
Mm.
But the responsibility remains. Both parents have got a joint obligation to contribute towards the maintenance of their children to the extent of the need of that child according to their means. So, if you have the means, the legal duty arises for as long as there is a child. Because where a child is involved, and when we talk about a child, we talk about every person under the age of 18. The moment it is a child, the need for maintenance is assumed. It doesn't need to be proven. It is assumed that the child has got a need. So, the courts only identify the extent of the need and the means of the parents.
Mm.
If you
we're going to
do
have
not
to pause
have the means,
there,
you can't.
Chief Magistrate, unfortunately, we need to go somewhere, and then we need to go to our latest eyewitness news. But we'll let you finish the point about what happens when the need arises, or what the courts do in this particular matter on the other side of 11 o'clock. But when we come back, we've got your latest eyewitness news. 9 minutes past 11. Welcome to the third and final hour of the Eusebius Makhaza Show with me, Gugzim Hlungu, standing in for Eusebius this morning and with you until midday. Coming up in this part of the show will be the Entrepreneurs Corner, and we'll be speaking to a young creative incubator called Muzi, which was founded by Andrew Levy. We'll also be speaking to Khumutso Tliane, who went through the incubator. And Muzi is looking to transform the creative industry by helping improve access to creative education and careers. They offer learnerships that develop creative professionals. And apparently they've got quite a really good rate of their alumni getting full-time work at leading agencies, media, production houses. So we're going to be talking to them about their work and what you need to know if you or someone you know would like to apply to be a part of Umuzi and their incubator and their learnership program. So that's going to come up a little bit later in this part of the show. But continuing a conversation which there really just isn't enough time for, but a very important one to have anyway, discussing what the law says about the rights and responsibilities of fathers, particularly if they're no longer in a relationship with the mother of their children, and what the law says in terms of empowering you to gaining access to remaining present in your children's lives, if that's what you would like to do. And we have two guests in studio. We're joined by the Chief Magistrate from the Western Cape Department of Justice, Chief Magistrate Daniel Tulari. He's on the line to us from our Cape Town studios, and I'm joined in studio by Martin Palders from Matrix Men. Thank you very much for staying with us and allowing us to extend this conversation. Chief Magistrate, in a moment, we'll allow you to complete your point about maintenance and how the courts deal with that particular issue. But just going to try and get through two calls. Mabu in Johannesburg, thank you very much for holding. Good morning.
Hi, good. Thanks for taking our call. So, husband has been cut off from seeing his child since the child was at about three, not 12 years old. At the time, the family cited that he had no rights because he had not paid any damages for impregnating their child out of wedlock. So subsequently to that, my husband and I have obviously tried in vain to assist in supporting the child financially, but they've refused this on a number of occasions. The lady is now married, and part of the Lobola negotiations then included my husband's child. So basically, the new husband negotiated that the child as part of their union. So what I'd like to know is, what rights does my husband have in this particular case? And do these courts then take into account cultural practices? And can they use them as basis to refuse my husband access to the child?
Thank you very much for that, Mabu. Martin, you had a point you wanted to add?
No. The advocate could cover that one.
Okay. I thought we wanted to make a point. Chief Magistrate, the answer to Mabu's question?
Yes. It is not up to the mother or her family. Mm-hmm. It is up to the children's court to determine whether he will have contact and care of his children.
Mm-hmm.
So my immediate advice would be, approach the children's court in the district where the children are, and then lodge an application for contact with the children. Because if I understand correctly, that's what she's looking for, contact, not necessarily care, which means having the children with them, but contact. So the court will call everybody present. The court will consider the evidence. Yes, customary law is considered by the courts, and where needs be is applied, and there is a constitutional obligation on us as presiding officers to develop customary law. But remember, it is subject to the Constitution, because the Constitution of the Republic is the supreme law of the country, and one of the provisions of the Constitution, section 28 subsection 2, says the best interests of a child are paramount in any matter concerning a child. So it is the children's court which has a call to make as to whether the presence of the biological father in the life of those children is in the best interests of the child or not, seen against the background of the facts that would be placed before that court. Mm. So she must approach the children's court. Perhaps just before, because we are moving towards closure, the comment that I would like to make, and arising out of what Lewis said earlier, I want to say to fathers, cry if you need to about the experiences that you have had with the mother of the children.
Mm-hmm.
But there must be a time for you to wipe off your tears. And after that, there is an obligation on you to walk back to your children and be present in their lives.
Thank you very much for that. Mpo in Pretoria, you have a question about a report you've received from the Children's Court. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Me and my wife, we're divorcing. It's been 3 years going on this process of divorcing. I have launched an application with Child Advocate, and I feel that they didn't take the evidence that was presented to them, as the report has been, after a year submitting all the documents, and we did only one interview with the child advocate. A year later, they give a report that the mother should have the primary custody of the child. But I'm always with the child. 4 or 5 days a week, I'm with the child, and the mother still wants the maintenance on it. And I want to challenge the child advocate's report. I need to know, how should I go about that?
Thank you very much for that question. Chief Magistrate, any advice from Paul?
Yes. Remember that in the main, the business of the divorce court is the dissolution of the marriage. That's its main business. The others, care of the child, maintenance of the child, is ancillary to the dissolution of the marriage. And both the high courts and the regional courts where divorces are dealt with, in the main, concentrate on dissolution of the marriage. The issues of contact and care in the main are considered, yes. But as I have said, whenever you think that the circumstances are such that there is a need for intervention on an order that has been made, which relates to the care and contact with the child or the maintenance of the child, that area has been kind of opened for specialization by the children's court. That is why even in the high courts, in recent times, even the regional courts, the practice is to refer these questions to the children's court, the question of contact and care, and the question of maintenance to the maintenance courts, because there you have courts that actually specializes in those areas. And I'm not saying the regional courts, because they are higher than us in status, and the high courts are not doing justice to these matters. All that I'm saying is, bear in mind that the main business of a divorce application is to determine whether, in fact, the marriage still needs to stand or not. The other issues are ancillary to that question. But if there are changed circumstances from the moment the order was made to date, you may approach the children's court. That's what I'm saying.
Thank you very much. That's Chief Magistrate Daniel Tulari on the line to us from Cape Town. He's from the Western Cape Department of Justice. Thank you very much for your time this morning, especially since it's your birthday. Hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Martin, all the best to everyone.
From Matrix Men, if someone's looking to get in touch with your organization, how do they go about doing that?
Well, we're all over social media. So we Matrix Men on Facebook, mm-hmm. on Instagram, on Twitter, all that sort of stuff. We also have blogs, matrixmen.org is our website. So yeah, go on there and get a hold of us. And I encourage all men just not to lay down and take what they feel they've been dealt. We have rights, and we have an important role to play in our children's lives. It's, you know, to say, don't give up, you know, don't lose hope. And even things are looking bad now, you know, children grow up and then they learn over time what's true and what's not true. And they will finally one day come back to you and say, hey, Dad, what happened? And that will be your opportunity to make right. It is painful, mm-hmm. and we're there to support men through that sort of process. And it's very difficult, but yeah, never lose hope.
Thank you very much. That's Martin Palders from Matrix. That's Matrix Men joining us this morning.